Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us each and every week as we bring to you information about real estate and mortgages. And lots going on in both of those fields. As anybody who has been paying attention this year alone, first month in January, we've seen a little bit of a rise in the mortgage rates, which kind of unexpected. But then again, isn't a lot of what's happening economically, especially if you're trying to buy a house, doesn't it always seem to go the opposite way that which you need? I mean, this is a difficult one to really calculate, although we have some companies and some Fed watchers thinking that if the Fed does lower interest rates, which we all are anticipating at some point, and that's a whole nother discussion about why and when and what's happening with employment and, you know, all that. But if, in fact, they do, we should see some mortgage rate relief. Now, as everyone knows on this show, because we're all so smart, the Fed rate has nothing to do with the mortgage interest rate, although the sentiment in that Fed rate when it does drop absolutely affects the bond market, and the bond market, especially the 10-year, affects mortgage interest rates directly. Okay, I'm Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. If you want to see and hear this show every week, and you can't make that radio on Saturday or Sunday, go to YouTube. Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, is on YouTube. Hundreds of shows there. I get 3 to 5 people a week who I've never heard of contact me and ask me things about what happened during a show. A lot of people, you know, what's a funny thing, a lot of people binge watch the YouTube show. Yes, that's right. I will get likes on, I don't know, 20 different shows in a row from people, and I'm thinking, wow, they have really got to get a life, or maybe they're just interested in the progress and what we talk about on the show. What we do talk about really affects decision-making, your decision-making, whether you're going to buy and sell, whether you're going to look for a better interest rate, whether you got a good mortgage interest rate, a mortgage broker, a mortgage banker. Maybe you're just shopping around and trying to figure out the best possible plan for you this year when you want to buy that house. So what is happening in the real estate market? What is happening in the mortgage market? That's what we talk about each and every week on the show. Again, I'm Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. Let's get right to it. 30-year fixed rate loan is at 6.75%. 15 years at 6.18. FHA, 6.05. Jumbo at 7.20. And the 5/1 ARM is at 6.22. The 2-year is at 4.256. And the 10-year is at 3.975. If you've noticed, we've really narrowed the gap between the 2 and the 10. It's about 30 basis points, but we've gone anywhere from 20 to 35 basis points for the last 3 or 4 shows, right, for the last month or so. And that tells you that we are closer and closer to a more normal market, especially since COVID. Driving over here, I was listening to NPR, and they had a economic outlook and an economic forecast based on history. Now, history obviously takes, you got to really look at history very soberly in order to figure out what's going to happen in the future if you use that as your only guide. Obviously, that isn't the only thing going on. War, weather, a number of other factors can affect local markets. Regional and worldwide markets were affected hugely by the pandemic, obviously now in the rearview mirror, but the debt that has been taken on not only locally, but also in the U.S. as well as worldwide, all of these things affect what happens when we talk about money, and we talk about interest rates, and we talk about bonds, and we talk about why people are buying in this particular market when we see inflation still not yet cured. I mean, people are feeling pretty good about it, but the reality is that we still see inflation in many, many areas. And because the definition between good inflation and bad inflation is always mixed and jumbled, if we see core inflation rising, which takes out fuel and takes out housing, okay, that's a bad thing. But if you add those two things back in, you see rising real estate prices hugely over the last 3 to 4 years, maybe 30 to 50% on most real estate investments. So if you bought in 2020, you actually have a tremendous windfall because the value of your house has gone up by about 30%. But they don't call that inflation, even though that really adds into it. So there's a lot of mixed things when you think about inflation, but that inflation number is a big deal, and it's why the Fed does what they do. We saw the Fed really remain steadfast and not raise interest rates this time again. We're at 5.25 to 5.5%, 5.5% on the Fed funds rate, and that Fed funds rate is what banks have to keep. They have to keep a certain amount of money in their vault, so to speak, or on their electronic balance sheet. And because that particular number shifts on a daily basis, borrowing money from the Fed is how they balance out their particular balance sheets that they need to have. And we had, during the pandemic, really almost nothing. So they were really allowing banks to borrow that money at 0.25%, a quarter percentage point. Now we're up to, as I said, 5 to 5.75%. That's pretty expensive if you're talking in billions and billions of dollars, which many of these companies, many of these banks are. And if that particular aspect of the economic forecast is figured in to your mortgage rate, well, obviously, if the federal government is charging 5.25%, that means that the banks then have to go out and charge more money for their loans or more money for their services. And this is a snowball effect, which, of course, is part of everyday business. Anyway, so listening to NPR on the way over, they were talking about the tremendous economy that occurred during the last presidential administration and the economy today. And there is great debate, I guess, depending on which way you look, as to how it was then and how it is today. One of the things that nobody likes to hear about or talk about is the dreaded national debt, which is now about $32 trillion. And they were talking about how things were better during one administration versus another administration. But during the time of the last president, there was a huge tax cut. And that tax cut fueled the spur. I mean, it really made activity at 3% GDP, which was really great. However, because of the tax cut, the debt rose. So how much did the debt rose? Everybody said, how much does it rise? Well, in the 4 years, now, this also includes 1 year or pretty close to a year of the pandemic, which is a whole nother thing. It's about $2 trillion. However, during the first initial 3 years, because of the tax cut, the deficit went up about $6 trillion. So during the Trump administration, $8 trillion was added to the national debt. So we went from $20 trillion to $28 trillion. Now, that's more than, I don't know, three or four presidents combined. And again, none of this is good news, because what happens is at some point, the interest on this debt gets so strong that cuts to spending is going to happen. Now, on this program 10 years ago, we sat and we talked about that and what that is. That is a ticking time bomb, as they would say, as Joe Biden has said. And that ticking time bomb is, at some point, the cuts to social programs are going to come, because the debt, the national debt interest that we have to pay on a yearly is going to come due, and it's going to cut into social programs, because nobody's going to cut into the military-industrial complex and the way they, you know, are geared to protect, quote-unquote, you and me. Now, one thing about this particular administration is that they have tried to figure out a way by which they could not add to the national debt, at the same time, increase services. And, of course, we all know how that worked out. Right. So this particular president has probably tacked on another $2.5 to $3 trillion onto the national debt, and we're not even into his last year. Well, we're kind of into his last year. So between the last two presidents, about another $10 trillion into the national debt. Now, we can't continue to do that. As I explained, what will happen to social services, what will happen to everything. Now, how does this all affect you when you're trying to figure out, do I want to buy that house today? Well, one thing that always protects you against any of that is ownership. Ownership of a house, ownership of land, ownership of something that you can continually use as an asset, either by appreciating value or as a safe haven, i.e. a hedge against inflation. Because your particular property goes up and down in price, it doesn't matter. You still have a place to stay. You still have a place that you live. And these two things are very difficult to calculate. Been in my house 30 years. If you know what I'm talking about, you're one of those 50 million people who still own a house, who are, you know, one of the 65 and older crowd who owns their house outright. Yeah, that part of it you cannot calculate. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Hey, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton. Thank you very much for tuning in. We bring to the show many people who really know quite a bit about what's going on in the local real estate market, national real estate market, but certainly in the mortgage industry and what's going on economically in all these places. From Las Vegas, joining me now is John T. Chun, who works for Realty One Group. And John T., first off, how are you?
Hey, I'm fantastic, Jeff. How about you?
I don't know if I'm fantastic, but I'm pretty good. Thank you. And I always enjoy talking to you. Not only do you bring a good, smiling, positive energy, but you really know what's going on.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, no matter what happens in life, you know, we always have to be and feel fantastic.
Yeah, I like that very much. Well, you're entrepreneurial in nature, as well as being a pretty good judge of what's happening in the economy. First off, the listings. What are the listings like in Vegas? What are some of the real estate opportunities you might be pitching out there, and what do you see?
Man, I tell you, I mean, the market hasn't changed a whole lot, okay, you know, for the last year. We are still low supply.
Right.
Currently, we only have 2.4 months supply, right?
So remember, that's low.
We talked about a stable market being 6 months.
Yep.
We only have 2.5. So very, very low. And now the last 6 months before January, there was a slight pause because, as you know, the interest rates were so high.
Right.
All the buyers were just paused for a while to see what was going to happen. Now that the interest rate has dropped a little bit, you know, we're about a point.
Yep.
Roughly.
Yep.
So people are back out now in full force. But the supply is still low. Even the builders can't build fast enough right now.
Now, so, where are they building? I mean, there's certainly enough land, but the question is it north? Is it continuing to move up into the Highlands more? Where are people building?
Oh, yes. It's all around Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, right. The Henderson area is,
yep,
growing into the desert now. We even have an area called McDonald Highland, which is going to be, which is called the Beverly Hills of Las Vegas, right?
Well,
it's going up the mountains now.
Okay.
And Summerlin is growing and growing, going up that mountain, you know, over there on the west side.
Yeah.
So we're growing everywhere. I mean, the influx of people, I mean, hasn't stopped either. Everyone coming from L.A. and, you know, other, you know, states that have high tax,
right,
are still coming here. So
Now do you see, Jante, do you see the fact that L.A. or California in general are selling high-priced real estate, moving to Vegas? Are they still getting the bang for their buck in terms of the difference of what things are valued at in California versus what they're valued at there?
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yes, yes. They're still getting a value, but now, because of the low supply and the high demand, our prices are ticking up.
Right.
Right now, the average median price for a home is $450. That's for single family.
Wow.
$450 minimum. Used to be,
wow,
half that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I can remember during the pandemic, I mean, houses, mm-hmm, even in 08, 09, now granted that's a long time ago, but still, I mean,
yeah,
that's going up almost 100%, if not 150% over that short,
oh,
period,
yeah,
of time.
Absolutely. So, but, you know, overall, though, it's still a fairly affordable place to come and live because our taxes are not as high as California.
No.
And other big major cities. So it's still very affordable, but like I said, it's ticking up. So anyone that wants to buy or invest, you need to do it now. Even if the interest rates are not as low as one would expect, I advise people to buy now because deals are hard to come by.
Yep.
Now, 6 months ago, it was within the last 6 months. It was actually a good time because everyone was kind of paused.
Right.
So it was a good time to negotiate with sellers. But it's okay. We're past that now. We're into the new year. It's still a decent time to buy because people are still kind of on the fence because of the interest rates. I think they're hoping that it's going to drop again to 2 or 3%, which I tell people that's not going to happen again.
No, not that low. We could see 5.5%, but not 2%, 3%. No way.
Exactly. And now in Las Vegas, they're offering incentives.
They're offering an incentive to do what? Ah, we lost Jean T. We'll try to get her back, but she's...
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here now. Go ahead. You're offering an incentive? Yeah. Go ahead.
The builders...
Ah, we lost you again. You're in, you're out. Anyway, what does Jean... Yes, I hear you. I hear you again.
Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
What is going on, right, with this technology?
I don't know. It's this is what's going to happen in the dystopian future where nothing works, but everything's touted to be the best ever. See? And that's what happens. Anyway, let's see if we can call her back. Daryl?
Oh,
are you there?
Yes,
yeah,
I'm here.
Okay, great. So tell us about what the builders are offering.
So they're offering incentives. Before it was closing costs. Now they're offering buy down of their rate.
Listen, you're going in and out on your end or my end. I don't know which one it is. We'll try to call you back. Anyway, what John T is? Yeah, it's just hello.
Okay.
Are you still there?
I can hear you.
Okay, you can hear me, right? But I couldn't hear you. That's the problem.
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, so it's good. Come on out to Las Vegas and let me know if I can help anyone out there. It'll be my pleasure.
Now, John T., you have a listing out there I saw the other day on one of the social media sites. What is that?
Thanks. The one I have here is a townhome in Henderson, and it's 1440 square feet, and it's a three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage townhome, and it's at $345,000.
Okay, and what street is it on? Is it off? Where is it off?
It's
is it off St. James?
No.
Is it off Rose? Is it off
Wagon Wheel?
Okay, yeah, I know.
Wagon Wheel. So it's a little more south, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, that's one of my listings now. I do a lot of land as well. So I do land, commercial, you know, single family and high rise.
Okay, so what a lot of people like to do is they like to build, right? So the entitlement process in Henderson is a little tougher than it is in Vegas proper, isn't it?
To build
from
the ground up. You know, I haven't asked to even get the permits to build.
I see.
So it is quite of a lengthy process, but I would imagine the material is a little bit better than the past couple of years.
Right. I'm sure it is. I mean, obviously, during the pandemic, yard foot of board was up to $1,600. I think it's back down to normal pre-pandemic levels, about $400 per 1,000 square foot of board. So I think a lot of that supply chain stuff has been really fixed during the, you know, obviously post-pandemic. And a lot of the... all the logistical problems of getting materials has really changed. I mean, cement prices are down, all the kinds of roofing prices are down. And I think in Vegas, don't new homes all have to have solar as well?
No, not still a choice.
Oh, I see. So in California, that's the way it is. It's just not there in Nevada yet.
No, yeah. I mean, solar adds another...
Hey, John T, if you can hear me, just tell people how they might be able to get in touch with you. That'd be awesome.
Yes, thank you for having me, Jeff.
Sure.
John T. Chun, Realty One Group. You can find me on 702-467-3131. That's my local number.
Excellent. Listen, I'll be out in Vegas very soon. I'll give you a call. We'll sit down and we'll just talk shop still. Thank you. I am Jeff Barton. This is my, what? Just anything, right? Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us, and listening to what we have to say about what's happening in the mortgage world, in the real estate world, not only here in Southern California, but in a number of different places that we bring guests from, either from Georgia or down in New Mexico, or certainly out in Las Vegas, Nevada, Arizona, back in North Carolina. We have a lot of different people that we reach out to so that we can get perspective on what you're facing in front of you, which may be too high of an interest rate. Maybe it's you have refied your house, you're at 3%, you want to sell, but you don't want to get into a new real estate deal at 6 and 7% mortgage interest rates. Yes, I understand there's a lot to discuss and a lot to know about what's happening in the mortgage world. As I said earlier in the show, we're looking at interest rates probably between 6 and 7% for most of the year, although there are some people who are looking at interest rates a little bit lower than that. So let me see, where is that particular quote? Very interesting. Okay, so the Bloomberg Markets Live Pulse Survey, which is something that you could look at yourself, go to Bloomberg or watch Bloomberg Television, however you want to do it, but they're talking about 30-year fixed rates will fall to 5.5% by the year end. Now, can you wait? Can you, sort of see what happens until then, unless you get an extremely great deal on a house that you're going to wait to the 5.5% mortgage interest rates? What I think you should do is try to get into anything and then refi if the rates, in fact, do fall from where they are currently. And what did I say? They were 6.75% for a 30-year fixed rate today. If you're looking at 5.5%, well, that's a heck of a drop in a year. If you bought now in 6-8 months, you'll already be by your hold period of 6 months. You could refi, and that would be certainly a way to go. Anyway, that's what Bloomberg says. Mark Zandi of Moody's says mortgage rates should trend lower this year, and I think that's also true. One thing we'd look at is the 10 and the 2. We've seen the spread between the 10 and the 2-year. These are the Treasury bonds. We've seen that narrow to 30 basis points. We were up over a point about a year ago, and we've also seen the yield on these particular Treasuries fall, and that's a good sign as well. It means that there's demand for Treasury debt in the U.S. The debt, what's happening? We talked a little about it in an earlier segment, and it's daunting. And we're looking someday, and not too in the distant future, that these debt interest payments will eat into entitlements. And that may be some political agenda of somebody in order to make sure that those particular entitlement programs shrink. I don't know. That's all big money politics stuff that I don't really get into. I just know that as people try to plan for their future, plan for retirement, what's considered safe today may not be safe tomorrow just simply because, hey, we can't afford it and we got to pay the interest rate because that's what we do here. We don't write debt off. We don't go bankrupt. That's not the U.S. way. No, we pay our debts and we pay the debt of things that happened in the past. Where we will be tomorrow, I'm not quite sure, but that's kind of how we've been. Let's see, the continuing quantitative tightening. Quantitative tightening, that is, remember when we were doing quantitative easing, that means that the Treasury was buying mortgage-backed securities, and they were buying Treasuries at the tune of about, $60 billion a month. Well, now they let those particular securities roll off the balance sheet. The Fed balance sheet is at about $7.5 trillion, and there, we talked about it last week on the show. We may see that change, but we're not. The Fed said today, or yesterday rather, that we're going to see that particular tightening, the quantitative tightening, i.e. the roll-off of $60 billion in treasuries and $30 billion in mortgage-backed securities roll off the balance sheet, meaning they will not reinvest that money, and so therefore the balance sheet of the Fed will shrink. Is that a good thing? I don't know, but it does eat up a lot of excess cash in the market, continuing the inflation fight that has been going on really nonstop for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, when we first started to recognize that that was a problem. One of the things in the early days, not recognizing it and having the Fed being blamed and the government economists being blamed, there's an issue with the nature of facts and what is a fact and what is the information that comes out. Now, we always talk about the GDP. We always talk about the treasuries. We always talk about how what's happening in the mortgage interest world is really a direct reflection of the 10-year bond. A lot of this has to do with the GDP numbers, the inflation numbers, and how they come off and who reports it and when they're reported. Well, during the last year, year and a half, we've seen revisions of these prime numbers happen frequently, more frequently, and having the numbers originally reported off by a lot. Now, there's a report called a JOLTS report, which talks about job availability and job losses in the economy and how that particular number of the JOLTS report is reported at one particular number and is revised quite a bit later, as are the employment figures. Now, when we look at the economy, when we say, hey, there's 9 million jobs available in the economy, we are going towards sentiment surveys. We're going towards trying to find, like in a website called Indeed, you will see job postings. Those job postings get reported in that number of available jobs in the JOLTS report. Job losses, jobs available. That's what the JOLTS report out there.
Well, there used to be Monster a long time ago.
Okay, so let's say there's 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 different job sites that the government uses to quote these statistics. Well, the problem with that is that you might have the same job posted on several different websites, and it's counted several different times. And this is a problem when we're trying to narrow down what exactly is the number so that those numbers can be used accurately when we're trying to gauge the strength or lack of strength of the economy. This has been happening quite a bit. It's happening with GDP because we just don't have the hard numbers in and the hard numbers that we can rely upon because of the nature of the reporting systems and the nature of how sentiment surveys get sent out, whether it's the Michigan survey, whether it's the conference board survey, whether it's any number of other surveys about either the employment, the future employment, the quit rate. All of these things that we've used heavily over the past 18 months has been called into question. And one of the reasons it's being called into question is because having revisions of up to a point when it comes to employment numbers is a big deal, because everybody gauges what's happening with the economy based on what's happening in employment. If you're saying, hey, there's 9 to 11 million jobs available, and really there's only 5 million jobs available, that means that the employment or unemployment gets adjusted accordingly. And so where are we in all this? Not necessarily sure. Anyway, these are things that we have to keep aware of. There are so many doubters in terms of information, whether it be in COVID research, whether it be in vaccines, whether it be in elections themselves, that another shoe to drop in terms of the validity of information that you hear and see and rely upon on a daily basis, because that's the projections we're getting from the government, is, again, another reason to take pause and evaluate. I mean, that's what we do, right? We look at what is, we evaluate our own situation, we try to come to some consensus as to what other people are saying about it, and then we make the best decision possible. Are we guessing? Yeah, I guess we are guessing, because the reality is these numbers are not as secure as I would like them to be. Not only that, I think for 3-4 shows in a row, I've been saying government information on statistical analysis or numbers on a monthly reporting are pretty solid, because they're numbers. They're based on buying and selling, you know? And we often say, hey, you can't trust the Chinese numbers. Well, can you really trust the U.S. Employment numbers? And that's what's really been coming out in the last week, week and a half. And it's depressing, because the economic news that we need to hear, it has to be relied upon, you know, faulty numbers or numbers that might not be as accurate as we'd like them to be. Now, there are revisions, so we know we eventually get to the correct number. That I can bank on, I think. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Appreciate you listening to the show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show this week, each week, every week, to hear what we have to say about the mortgage interest rates also the different programs and the different stuff that's happening in real estate. We bring experts to the show all the time, and most of these people know way more about what's going on in the mortgage interest rate or in their particular community than I do. And one of these people joins us now. It's Carrie Anderson. She's actually from Axos Lending, and they've been on the show before. This is Carrie's first time, and I really appreciate it. Thanks, Carrie. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Axos, tell us a little bit about what Axos specializes in and how you're doing.
Yeah, well, we're actually a bank. Axos Bank is an FDIC-insured bank. We've been around for many years. I've been with the bank now over 13 years doing wholesale third-party lending. And we used to be known as B of I or Bank of Internet. That might ring a bell.
That's right, of course.
Yeah. So we've been around for a while. We specialize in what's called portfolio or balance sheet lending, which means we don't trade our paper. We keep it on our balance sheet, which gives us a lot of flexibility. And we also do loans up to $30 million. So those are kind of few and far between right now.
We had so much success with B of I, and I had not remembered that, and then bad on me. But terrific people. They did a lot of high-end type loans, which we liked. They were easy to work with, and I assume that that is all still the same.
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the jumbo program, because I know during the pandemic, jumbos were sold, you know, very cheaply at 3, 4, 5%, but now they had a difficulty getting them off their balance sheets or selling them. What are you all doing in regards to keeping interest rates as reasonable as possible, especially on these jumbos?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, being a portfolio lender, we aren't dealing with trading these. We're dealing with our own bank's net interest margin in relation to the Fed borrowing rate.
Right.
We try to borrow as little as possible. And if you do your research on Axos Bank, we weathered the last round of banking storms very well. We positioned ourselves with very good investments that did not send us the way of
what, Silicon Valley Bank? Is that what you're trying to say?
I didn't want to make any shout-outs.
No, it's okay. Exactly. I mean, I'll say it. It's my show.
So we did what we should have been doing all along and made, you know, the right investments and the right calls, and we weathered all those storms. Where we do seem to get a little bit of compression, though, is when the Fed kept raising rates and our net interest margin is directly related to that, so that we had to raise our rates. We did absolutely everything we could to keep those as low as possible. And so now we don't have the same kind of pressure to keep raising them, but we're still waiting for the Fed to lower them so that we can lower our rates. And that's on our portfolio. We also do conforming. We do traditional jumbo. We have a whole wide array of non-QM products that we do trade now, which gives us kind of the best of both worlds. So I think we've done pretty well, actually, considering.
Where do you see the market heading in terms of the product availability, and what kind of products are we going to see this year that we might...
If I knew that, I would be retired by now. just based on the way the wind is blowing, I would say that everybody should be cautiously optimistic, right?
I mean,
you don't want to stop everything. There's definitely some very, very good good signs right now. From my own personal corner of the market, which, you know, is smallish, I've noticed after the second week of January, my phone just going crazy. And a lot of it was people who had been on the fence about purchasing or selling and that need, you know, short-term bridge money to go get their next house. They're all hopping off the fence in January, which to me speaks volumes about where, you know, things are headed. I think the Fed's last move or lack thereof made people a lot less worried about 2024. And I am seeing a level of activity that I did not anticipate until at least March. I was digging in for a very slow first quarter.
Right.
And after the first 2 weeks, it's been better than I could have expected. So that makes me extremely, extremely optimistic for this year. And, we were all predicting things to definitely get better, if nothing else this year. But It's exceeding my expectations so far. So okay. Very excited about that.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I don't follow it like program to program or borrower to borrower. I've really gone more macro on a lot of this stuff. So getting getting the boots on the ground, sort of look at it, where do you see the major issues are for current borrowers? Is it in the availability of funds or is it just...
No. I think you'll notice there's actually a very wide availability. And I can't speak for my bank in its entirety. I work for a division that just works with other brokers and bankers.
Yep.
So we're third party. And what we focus on is, like I said, that portfolio side of things that are maybe a little complex, non-QM, and that just means things that are maybe less than full doc. Though that I'm actually very satisfied with the availability of product out there. I think it's just right. I don't think it's crazy like it was pre-pandemic.
Right.
But I don't think that it's gone so far in the other direction that we're back to 2010, which is when I started with this company. So I think that there's actually, I know that personally have a better array of products than I have ever had and can reach more clients than I have ever been able to. So I think if I'm any indication, I would say that we don't really have an issue with availability.
Now, do you see a consolidation in the mortgage broker world or do you see an expansion? I mean, there's so much going. Okay. Okay, that's...
Yeah, I see an expansion. And when you say broker, I mean in opposition to banking and retail origination. So I am seeing, and like I said, I've been in this business over 25 years, and I've been with this bank for 13, where I have seen my clients go from being a broker to being a banker to being retail banking to going back to brokering. And I think that just... You know, that just speaks to the market we're in right now.
Right. I agree.
Rates are not super low. They want product.
Right. And I think anybody who's been around the world, like you just described, they're looking at, hey, you know what? I don't want to get caught with my, you know, whatever without being able to pay back the funds that are available or the funds that I've borrowed. And I think many of the brokers that are now back to be brokering like it because there's a security. It's not your money.
Mm-hmm.
You're just taking a cut off the top.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's the trend. That's how things are trending right now for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Now, locally in the San Francisco market, how is lending there? Do you find it more difficult to lend in a city with that kind of demand and that housing shortage? Any harder than anywhere else?
I wouldn't say harder in that the availability of credit's there. That's not the problem. The problem is supply and demand. Supply is far less than the demand right now, and it has been that way. And like I said, I'm just now starting to see the first rumbling that needs, you know, the first movement that has to happen is sellers putting their houses on the market.
Right.
And I'm seeing that. So that's why I'm so excited because the last, at least for 2023 and parts of 2022, it's just been the amount of houses available and forget my market, the entire United States is so small and nowhere is it worse than in places like the Bay Area. So that just impacts your volume. And it's not because you don't have money to lend. It's because people aren't selling.
Do you see that, the negative press that San Francisco gets because of the homeless population or the crime or whatever it is it driving demand any differently than if there was none of that?
That might be a better question for a real estate agent.
Sure.
But from my vantage point, I would say that yes, pricing has maybe softened a little in San Francisco proper. Now, I deal with the whole of Northern California and some of Southern California. So for me, I've lived in the suburbs. I don't live in the city.
Right.
But yeah, I think in the micro markets in the city are definitely affected by what's going on from a managerial standpoint in the city. However, I am still seeing transactions happening in San Francisco and people still want to live there. And you know, it's never as bad as the media makes it out to be. I'm
Agreed.
Not saying it's perfect, but I live here. I venture into the city a few times every couple months. And, you know, it's still probably, in my opinion, one of the best places in the world. And yeah, you know, I mean, I think that, it's just lack of inventory is keeping values in a good spot. So for now, I think so far so good.
I agree with you. Hey, listen, we've run out of time. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Could you let people know how they might be able to get in touch with you if they need questions answered about some of the products?
You can email me. It's canderson@axosbank.com. And, you know, I can send you my phone number if you want me to put that on, if you want to put
sure.
that on the, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That'd be great. Okay, awesome. Carrie, thank you very much for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Right,
have you back.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Have
thank
good
you.
Day.
Thank you. You too. That's Carrie Anderson from Axos Bank. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us each and every week as we bring to you the best and most valuable information that you're going to know. And you know what? If you're out there and you're looking for a house right now, you have to talk to somebody who really knows what the heck they're talking about when it comes to mortgages, mortgage interest rates, mortgage programs, because not everything you read and hear and see in the news is something that you're going to, you know, act upon. So you really need somebody in your corner. And that person for us has always been Charles Giscombe, who works for USF. He joins us now. Charles, how are you?
Great, Jeff. Thanks for having me today, as always.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming on the show, too. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay. All right. So we're in February. We're looking at, a better than average from last year interest rate at about, 6.75 on a 30-year fixed. And we're probably a point higher than that in a lot of the non-QM products. Where do you see
Correct.
The market heading? What kind of new products might be available this year that we didn't see last year? What are you looking at?
You know what, Jeff? Kind of the same thing. The rates are coming down, like Jeff said, 6.75, anywhere from a 6.75 to a 7.3974 is what you can look like. And if you're looking at non-QM, you're looking at a point higher. I do see traditional loans still getting done. Obviously, a lot of people who claim they're interest rate conscious still feel like, you know, they're not low enough yet, but there's a lot of people transacting who are not so concerned. What I've noticed as speaking to people is I say, you're still not going to want to stay in a 6.7 or a 7. So we're still looking at a strategy of just getting in, getting acquisitions done, knowing that the interest rates are trending down, and so that you will have a longer-term strategy to get out of that into a lower interest rate when it does get that low. But right now, we're looking better than we were before last year, at the end of last year, and I think that we're moving in a good direction. I still love the non-QM loans. I push a lot of the clients, or don't push them, I give them the information and suggest that they do it. Since they're still looking at interest rates, it's not about that. Now it's about the convenience and the path of least resistance getting into these homes. So I am leaning towards that direction because the non-QM loans are, you know, a little bit less strict. You know, there's no mortgage loan limits. You know, everybody can go up to the $2 million amount or whatever it might be. It's not a loan limit for a particular county or place. You could do 40-year loans. There's no mortgage insurance, even if it's above 80% LTV. Just a lot of different loans, structures, and different value-added services that you can get with a non-QM loan compared to a traditional loan, which requires all the documentation and abide by all the TRIDs and RESPAs that you have to follow.
You know, you talked a little about how you can, I guess, deal with your client. A lot of clients get distracted. Now, we're in a year of distraction, right? We got this political landscape. We got wars all over the place. People are just not paying attention to maybe what they should be in terms of what is available in the market. What can they do in the market? How do you refocus somebody on something which is in their best interest? Now, I know we're all adults and we're all supposed to know what's in our best interest, but a lot of times a buyer that's been out there for a long time, seen interest rates go up to 7.5%, almost 8% last year, is now sort of weary about the whole process, but yet we've seen, you know, the interest rates come down almost a point, point and a half, and we're probably going to continue to see it drop over the course of the year. How do you refocus your client?
That is a great question. I was just talking to some of my colleagues about this last week. Jeff, the way I view it, they're saying that's an interesting take on it, Charles. You know what? I use this distraction in our favor. What I say is, there's a lot of stuff going on that is going to play a part. They're all variables in the interest rate and where the market go. So don't be confused by the distractions. What you do is you utilize the distraction to say, I'm not concerned about a long-term play right now. I'm concerned about a short-term play. So until all the distractions get settled and stabled and sit in their place, I'm not concerned about what my final interest rate's going to be. I know that they're coming down. I'll get into something now, knowing that when the elections and all the different stuff that's happening settles out, we're going to have some lower interest rate. And that's when we can take a look at finalizing our strategy and where we're going to be for long term.
Now, that's an excellent way to put it, because I think we all get distracted, all get a little bit confused by the, you know, the environment we live in. Now, you know, we're watching TV, we're on the internet, we're, you know, talking to people on the phone. It gets distracting. Focusing or refocusing or letting people know, hey, look, you need to, like, pay attention because the opportunities are right in front of you. And I think there are many people who realize that, but there are those clients that just don't, that are just wrapped up in it. I always look at that and say, hey, you got to refocus. And getting people to do that is not easy.
It's not easy at all, Jeff. And I will tell you, a lot of times you have to take the common sense approach and go, you're so concerned. What is it that you think individually that you can do to change that right now?
Excellent, right. That's right.
And they say, well, I can't. I really can't. I'm just concerned about it. No problem. So we need to transact and get us in the best situation that's available now, because there's still houses out there that are having value, appreciating. Their values haven't dropped. We have interest rates that are slowly, steadily going down, but the values are still good. There's still equity in a lot of properties. There's still a lot of opportunity. So what are we going to do now is we're going to use those distractions, right? We're going to say, this is allowing us not to say, this is our last and final. So now let's go get some work done. And when all the dust clears, when the elections are over and the wars that are happening, the different things that, when those things settle out, the market will get some more stability. We'll know what our footing is going to be, and then we'll make our long-term strategy approach at that point.
Do you see that places around the country, because you do loans everywhere, right? You're in North Carolina, you're out in Vegas, you're up in Illinois, maybe California, Arizona, some of these other places in Florida. Where do you see maybe some of the opportunity that others may not see just because you have that reach?
Well, you know, Jeff, there's a lot of other programs that we provide collectively that I provided at Malibu. I'm at USF now, still utilize Malibu. There's a lot of things that we can do. And you have to look at it. Like a lot of times now, you know, maybe you're not going to find, you want to lock into your primary residence or your forever home. But there's investment properties, fix and flip properties, mixed use properties, storage and warehouse everywhere in small states and metropolitan areas. There's deals out there. You know, the key to all of this is truly saying, I have an individual who's a loan officer who is knowledgeable enough to get me into these programs that I need to, and a real estate agent who knows how to go find it. You know what? If you have those in all the different states or wherever you're from, then you're always going to be able to find a deal. There's a deal everywhere. You just need to make sure that you're prepared to pull the trigger when it's time, and that hopefully your loan officer that you have discussed your strategy with is already ready for you, ready to move on to the next deal, having the next strategy together for you. But there's deals in all these different places. I mean, Jeff, we do business upstate, Syracuse, Ohio, Michigan. There's different places that have loans that have, you know, we always say those who are first will be last and those who are last will be first. And we mean that in regards to value, too. So a lot of times when the values go down because the market trends, there's a lot of opportunity in those places. Because if the value is going to go back up, you're buying in low, you're fixing it and renovating it, and then you've got value. And then you can cash out and start creating your own little banking situation that will allow you to keep financing in all the places that provide opportunity.
Okay, give us a quick 1 through 5. What do people need to give you in order to be prepared to take advantage of whatever comes along?
The first thing I ask somebody is, are you working? Are you consistently working? Because if you're not consistently working, that automatically lets me know you're taking it to another bucket.
Right.
Obviously, Jeff, we say, hey, listen, you got paycheck stubs, you got tax returns, you got W-2s, okay? You got your bank statements. You have all those things. A lot of people will say, well, no, or I haven't provided, I haven't done my taxes yet, or I don't want to show that. It immediately lets me know I need to go to another a product or program, which be non-QM. Now I say, if you have bank statements, if you're working for yourself, do you have 12 months of bank statements? Do you have an entity, right? What's your credit score? Get your credit score done. Do you have some savings? Are you ready for that? Do you need some down payment assistance? Those are the questions I ask individuals to find out what kind of structure they have, and then will allow me to put them in the proper bucket to get them qualified and not put them in situations where we're wasting their time on loans that they're not prepared for and don't have the proper structure for.
Okay, excellent information. Listen, we're up against it. I'm sorry that we ran out of time, but that's always the way we do it when we do our conversations, so I'm sorry about that.
I love it.
Okay, excellent. Could you shout out, let people know how they might be able to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. If you want to call me, you're going to call me at that good old Nevada, 702-328-5191. That's 702-328-5191. If you want to reach out to me via email, it is cgiscombe@usfwholesale.net. That is cgiscombe@usfwholesale.net.
Excellent. Charles, thanks very much. Always appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Thank you very much. That's Charles Giscombe from USF, United Security Financial. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.